This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
8:47 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning. On the back of optimism for pandemic recovery, government forecasts for the Malaysian economy this year are fairly bullish, with Bank Negara predicting economic growth between 5.5 to 6.5%. Malaysia's trade volume has also seen impressive rebound, with total trade surpassing 2 trillion ringgit between January to November 2021, and both exports and imports are charting double-digit growth.
But the positive indicators belie structural weaknesses in our economy that could hinder long-term economic growth, especially following given the economic scarring caused by the pandemic. But what are the structural issues that require urgent attention for Malaysia to achieve its target of becoming a high-income nation?
So joining us to discuss this is Dr. Tham Siew Yen, visiting senior fellow at the ICA's Yusof Ishak Institute. Siew Yen, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Malaysia's economy was kept afloat by its trade activity, with total trade surpassing 2 trillion ringgit between January to November last year. But do trade statistics belie the structural issues that hinder economic growth for the country?
Actually, the trade data itself shows some of the structural issues that we have. For example, exports are import dependent. We know that Malaysia's manufacturing export still has a very high foreign content, and this is actually above the ASEAN average and the OECD average. So essentially about 70% of the imports are used as intermediate inputs for production across the industries. So we are able to export only because we can use imported intermediate inputs. That shows one structural problem that we have. The second is actually there's increasing importance of re-exports in Malaysia's trade. Re-exports are goods which are taken out of the country in the same form as they were imported without any transformation. So we see from the data, say in 1990, re-exports were only about 4% of total exports. In 2020, it is 19.1% of total exports. Which means that essentially some of the goods we exported from Malaysia are not produced from Malaysia. They are brought into the country and then they are re-exported. And in fact, in our very critical E&E sector, the highest manufacturing export share shows that in 2020, re-exports constituted 25%. This shows that actually something that we all know, that the manufacturing sector is actually shrinking. You know, the term that we always use, the hollowing out, the industrialization. This is happening and the services share is increasing in terms of the contribution to GDP, employment and all that.
So what about the services then? Has this replaced manufacturing import exports?
But the trade structure shows we still depend on manufacturing exports. Our services exports don't do well. We are in a perennial services deficit. So we actually have a surplus in services primarily in travel and tourism. When the travel and tourism crashed in 2021, the services deficit jumped. So it's not just that we have to look at the structure of the economy. When we look at the structure of trade itself, we can see the structural problems.
So as you've described, Malaysia's exports are seen as relatively lower on the production value chain. Why is it important for Malaysia to level up in terms of exports, and how can this be done?
Well, this has been a problem for a long time, you know. If we go back maybe to discussions 10 years ago, this was already a problem that was recognized, that we are exporting on the more labor-intensive segments of the global value chain. We need to move up the global value chain by producing what we call more complex products. For example, what we see happening in Malaysia is what we call process upgrading. That means the production process have improvements in the production process so that we can remain price competitive. But there's very little product upgrading and product differentiation which have a qualitative difference. So we have continued to move on by doing more of the same, but not by doing more differently. So we need to be able to do more differently. But for that, we actually need to incorporate things like R&D, and you need investments, investments in R&D. It's not just about innovation, but who is going to innovate and who is going to invest in innovation? There are risk factors, you see. So why is it Malaysian firms are reluctant to invest in R&D? Maybe that's an important question to actually look at.
So what structural issues should be prioritised by policymakers then in response to the economic gaps that have been revealed by this pandemic?
We have been looking at digitalization for a long time, even before the COVID. What the COVID has exposed very clearly, the digital divide among the firms. We have a World Economic Forum survey on ASEAN looking at how digitalization can help economies to recover. This is a 2021 study, and so it's a very recent survey. The interesting thing that it showed is that the entrepreneurs that have invested in digitalization recognize and report gains from it, and that spurs them to want to invest more in digitalization. And they have embraced this not just as a short-term solution for the COVID, but as a long-term solution for survival. The converse was also very interesting. Those who did not use digital tools are less motivated to increase their adoption. So there's this digital divide among firms. Those who have decided to move forward have done it and will invest further. And those who may be persuaded over the COVID experience to embrace more, and those who did not, for whatever reason, even despite all the government incentives that have been given for digitalization. If we want to close this digital divide, then we have to be able to have policies that can facilitate a greater adoption of digitalization. For example, one of the issues raised up again and again is affordability, you know, broadband and all that. Maybe things like 5G will be very important. In some ways, when we look at Malaysia, Asia compared to other countries, we, because of the emphasis on ICT and digitalization, we are actually in a position to be able to use this to facilitate recovery. The question is actually to be able to enhance this initiatives further.
If we look at it from the other angle, what economic strengths can Malaysia leverage on in the pursuit of becoming a high-income nation? Where are the opportunities for innovation?
I think the digital economy holds a lot of potential in innovation. I don't think we are short in terms of opportunities for innovation. I don't think we are short in terms of even people. I think the question is actually, how can the government provide the facilitating environment for investors to invest in innovation, since it is risk-taking? So the facilitating environment requires certain things which we are a bit short of at this point in time, things like policy certainty, continuity. Nobody's going to invest if we are not sure what's happening tomorrow, right? Protection of intellectual property rights. The rule of law, court must be able to uphold all these. And then, of course, the provision of the necessary infrastructure, physical or infrastructure, human capital development. We have a lot of investments in education. It has to be able to foster the appropriate human capital that is needed for all this innovation to bear fruit. I have never thought of it as a shortage of opportunities. I have always looked at it in terms of the policy environment. Does it favour, does it help to foster innovation?
So how realistic are the official projections that Malaysia's economy can actually grow between 5.5% to 6.5% this year? Is this pace of growth sustainable?
I really think there's a great deal of uncertainty, mainly because, to me, the COVID situation is still very fluid. And I think that since we are very open in terms of our economy and dependency on other countries for travel and trade, it is not just our recovery, but recovery in our main trading partners, for example, China. So the forecast of slowdown of growth in China by all the international agencies, EIU, ADB, IMF, whatever, that would affect the trade and our trade, since they're our largest trading partner. And then they have this zero COVID strategy, unlike the rest of us in the region, where we have said that we will live with COVID. But then, you know, the largest inbound tourist in ASEAN is China. So as long as they have zero COVID and they do not open their doors, then tourism will continue to suffer. So that's the uncertain part, because it's not just us, but our trade partners. And then the whole issue about recovering from COVID is not just about the growth. It's about how do we deal with economic scarring. 2 years of it, you know, how do we recover from that? The investment, the employment losses. how do we revive certain sectors? Travel and tourism is still pretty bad. The other thing is that the whole macroeconomic management part is all very uncertain. All the high fiscal debt, it's not just for Malaysia, but for all other countries also. What do we do with the fiscal debt? How do we increase our tax revenue? This is a very, very difficult subject. Governments get voted out for the wrong tax measures. So you need better tax and administration, and definitely, yes, we need new tax revenues. These are difficult issues to tackle. Not a good time to be a politician. And then the other part of it, the monetary policy, the impending inflation, how do you balance that with the interest rate hikes? And then how would that impact all those loans? So it's the macroeconomic management is going to be tricky.
And while we have you on the line, coming back to trade, we've yet to ratify the CPTPP or RCEP. Will this make a difference to our trade value?
Since the global trade can contribute towards our trade recovery and our growth, then definitely these agreements play a very important role. We need to ratify it because both agreements will help countries to retard the increasing protectionist trends that we see even before COVID. So we have seen, for example, the increasing use of non-tariff measures. We have seen, for example, in the increase in bilateral tariffs between US and China. And all this protectionism will continue to actually increase in some form or another. And the only way to hold this back is actually through free trade agreements. And that's why these agreements are very important. And we not only need to ratify it, but we need actually to teach our firms how to use it. Because a lot of the problems with the free trade agreements is their underutilization. Their firms do not know how to use them, and therefore, on the ground, they are not seen to be important. But if we do cross-country comparisons, we can look at, for example, Vietnam. And why is Vietnam actually doing so well? Part of the reason, not all of it, is that they have actually ratified all the important agreements. They have ratified the CPTPP, the RCEP, and they also have an EU-Vietnam FTA, which EU has only with Singapore and Vietnam in this region. Investors will inevitably look at their FTA partners because the FTA provides a certain degree of policy certainty. Now, for Malaysia, I always say when policy certainty is very uncertain, then FTAs play an even greater important role because it is a binding agreement. Therefore, it lends a certain degree of policy certainty.
Siew Yan, thanks very much for speaking with us this morning. That was Dr. Tham Siew Yan, visiting senior fellow at the IC's Yusof Ishak Institute, talking to us about the outlook for the Malaysian economy and some of the structural issues that really need attention if we want to achieve this goal of becoming a high-income nation in the future.
You know, I think everyone knows what the structural issues are. It's whether there's the political will to push it through. I think that's always going to be a bit of a hurdle, right? So even when it comes to, like she mentioned, tax reform, nobody wants to implement new taxes or even implement GST, but when it's absolutely necessary. But a strong government or a government that cares for our future might do so. Let's hope so.
Let's hope so indeed. She did talk a lot about having the right policy environment, and she spoke about some of the gaps that we're seeing at the moment. A lot of political uncertainty, a lot of policy uncertainty, and all this isn't good in attracting investment to come to the country. She made a point in a separate conversation where trade agreements like RCEP, like CPTPP, it's good for Malaysia to be part of this because this contributes to the policy certainty that investors, that foreign investors crave.
It signals to the rest of the world that we are ready. We are accountable to international standards and we are happy to do so. But it's not only foreign investment we need to consider. We actually need to actually increase the level of investment by our own Malaysians, which has been declining in the last few years.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.